I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World. The lone surviving gunman in last year's attacks on Mumbai, India, has told his story. Ajmal Kasab confessed yesterday to his part in the violence. Today, Kasab told a judge in Mumbai just how his life's path led to his spraying automatic gunfire at commuters. Here's his story. Kasab said that he'd been unhappy with his low wages as a shop assistant in Pakistan, so he sought out the Mujahideen, Muslim jihadists, for training to become a professional bandit. They directed him to the militant group behind the attacks. Christine Fair is a senior political scientist with the RAND Corporation and a professor at Georgetown University. She's now in New Delhi, India. Kasab's story, as he told it in recent days, I wonder if you find it credible and what in it you find surprising.
I think what has been most interesting here in Delhi, and probably the source of considerable incredulity, was that one of his instructors was actually, allegedly by Kasab, an Indian. He claimed that this individual actually taught him Hindi. Hindi and Urdu have very similar grammar, but there are really significant vocabulary differences. And if you're not careful, those vocabulary items could quickly give you away as a Pakistani. So I think in terms of what he's confessed to, that might be the most shocking. He certainly disavowed some of the killings that I think some people thought that he was responsible for. So there's been some doubt about some of the killings that he's abdicated responsibility for. But I think the basic tenets of what he laid out in his confession hasn't really surprised that many people other than the Indian trainer.
This horrific attack that happened that traumatized India, traumatized the world, what importance do you read in the fact that one of his handlers was Indian?
Lashkar-e-Taiba has been able to attract disaffected Indian Muslims. Now, obviously, terrorism has been going on in India now for decades, and many of the groups that were perpetrating these attacks were Pakistan-based, so there was always a network of basically logistical, you know, safe houses and other providers of logistical assistance, and that obviously implied Indian complicity, and that's been going on for decades. But Lashkar-e-Taiba in particular has been able to develop Indian cells, Indian operatives, Indian commanders, and so this is not something new, it's just not something that is terribly... people are not terribly comfortable about talking about it.
And is that the kind of thing, then, that is addressed now? I mean, after Kasab talks about this, tells the judge, confesses, is that the kind of thing that Indians themselves start talking about?
Well, not really, because the preponderance of the attack was really executed by Pakistan-based militants. The real focus is, what is the Pakistani state going to do? And I think all of the eyes now are on Pakistan. And this came up, of course, with Secretary Clinton's visit. You know, she was very clear that she expects Pakistan to engage in a transparent judicial proceeding to bring the individuals culpable to some sort of account.
What is the bigger picture here? I mean, this young man is telling a story saying he was a disaffected young man who took up arms not because of ideology, but because there is very little else for him to do to escape poverty. For you, though...
I take a lot of umbrage to that characterization of this event. Terrorism in South Asia is not like terrorism elsewhere, because the group that we're talking about here did not just spring up out of nowhere. This was a group actually set up actively with the assistance of Pakistan's external intelligence agency. So it's not a non-state actor in the way that one might think about other terrorist groups, for example, like Al-Qaeda, where individuals just sort of bumble along, meet a recruiter, and find themselves in a boat killing Indians. So I think this sort of, he's a young, disaffected guy who was poor, had no opportunities, became a criminal, and then joined the militant group. That's a sideline from the big story, which is the international community in Pakistan itself has been unable to get Pakistan to renounce terrorism as a tool of foreign policy. So even if every person in Pakistan wasn't poor and disaffected, if your tool of foreign policy is terrorism, there will be a way to man those missions.
And
I think the real question for the United States is, how do we persuade Pakistan to cease and desist from relying upon this tool?
Does the United States have it within its power to get Pakistan to stop doing that? Certainly it's put a lot of pressure on Pakistan and other areas against Al-Qaeda. I mean, how much power does the U.S. have to do that?
My personal assessment is that the United States has very little sway. We certainly have less sway than the Indians think we do. And the only way for Pakistan to go forward, actually, is for Pakistanis, the citizenry, to come to some kind of conclusion about what kind of state that they want to live in.
Christine, thank you very much. Christine Fair, senior political scientist with the RAND Corporation and a professor at Georgetown University. We spoke to her from New Delhi, India. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. All right, have a great day.